President Hu meets with President Obama.
And with the presidents of some of America's biggest corporations.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media, hello, I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. It's the midday update from Marketplace.org for Wednesday, January 19th. Coming up, what will American business leaders talk to the Chinese president about? And later, love kitty but hate kitty's litter box? Someone will come and take care of it for you.
But first, President Obama continues his meetings with the Chinese President Hu Jintao today. There's a state dinner later in his honor, but before all of the pomp and circumstance comes nuts and bolts of American business. Hu is set to meet with corporate CEOs, including Lloyd Blankfein of Goldman Sachs and Jeff Immelt from General Electric.
President Hu is likely to get an earful from those business leaders about China's undervalued currency, the trade imbalance, the country's treatment of American businesses. But a survey out today of U.S. businesses in China shows a different picture. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai.
They complain about DVD piracy and intellectual property violations. They gripe about a market that favors Chinese companies. But U.S. businesses in China are, well, happy.
Very impressive financial results, best ever since we've been doing this survey.
The American Chamber of Commerce survey coordinator, Stephen Gansner, says U.S. companies never made so much money in China. 8 out of 10 companies surveyed say they're very profitable.
The experience level of 5, 10, 15 years in the market have helped companies to be a little bit smarter, avoid some of the stupid mistakes that were made in the past, and know how to win.
But that doesn't mean they're content with the rules. 2/3 of companies surveyed continue to be frustrated about China's regulatory environment. Many feel that China's so-called indigenous innovation laws, a national campaign to spur innovation among Chinese companies, is creating an increasingly unfair playing field. But it's a field nobody intends to leave anytime soon. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz from Marketplace.
Let's get some analysis now on the Chinese visit to the United States with Richard DeKayser, an economist with the Parthenon Group. Richard, good morning.
Good morning.
So what do these CEOs want from China?
In a single word, they want access. They want equal access when bidding on government contracts. They want to stop the bootlegging of American movies and music,
right,
and generally the theft of property, and they want to scale back the requirement that they have partnerships with Chinese companies. They want to operate on their own.
What do the Chinese want from the CEOs?
Pretty much the opposite. they want to mollify American companies. They rely desperately on American technology. Their economic development is heavily predicated on this continued flow of technology into China. They want these companies to be satisfied that the existing relationships are in their best interest, and hopefully, over time, they will find that it's mutually productive and it's a win-win for all involved.
Richard, do you think that either side is going to get some of what they want from these meetings?
I do. I think it's in the usual fashion of give and take. There'll be some very modest ground giving on both sides. American companies at the end of the day will accept the terms that they're given because the market is so huge in China, and Chinese companies will in turn give back. They've been letting their currency rise. That's been one of the demands American companies have been having. And that in turn will provide a little ground on their end. So it's the usual negotiating back and forth. Each side will give a little. No one will get everything they want.
All right, Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Meanwhile, European policymakers are focusing on China as well, and Beijing's role in the continent's debt crisis. China reportedly bought a large amount of bonds from Portugal and Spain last week, which then helped boost confidence in the stability of Europe's currency. But now European leaders wonder what exactly the Chinese are up to. From London, here's Marketplace's Stephen Beard.
China's exact role in the bond auction isn't clear. Some reports suggest that Beijing secretly bought a substantial chunk of the $5 billion worth of government bonds on offer. The sales went well. Anxieties about the European debt crisis waned, at least for now. And that might have bought China some goodwill in Europe. That was probably one of the main reasons they purchased the bonds, says Charles Grant of the Center for European Reform.
The Chinese are seen to be helping out at a difficult moment. And this, of course, helps the Chinese to ensure that EU policy towards China is not too hostile or too critical.
He says Beijing's main aim is to have the EU's ban on arms sales to China lifted. The ban was imposed by the US and Europe after the Tiananmen Square massacre in 1989. The US wants to keep the embargo in place, but the EU's foreign policy chief recently argued in favour of scrapping it. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, the 19th of January. I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York. For the latest look at the markets, you can go to the numbers at marketplace.org. We'd also love to hear from you. Just go to marketplace.org and click on contact. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world?
The Federal Reserve has kept interest rates here at home at just above zero for more than 2 years. But over in Brazil, another expected interest rate hike today could push rates above its current 11%. Inflation in Brazil is a six-year high, and the central bank there is desperate to get things under control. The BBC's Paulo Cabral joins us now from Sao Paulo. Good morning.
Hello, Steve.
Why is inflation so high over there in Brazil, and what risks are there if they keep raising the interest rates?
Well, you know, what we have now in Brazil is what economists call demand inflation. That means people willing to buy too much. That's not surprising. Brazil is in a very good economic moment, so people have more money. Supply and demand makes that prices then rise. And then how that relates to interest rates. Government has to keep the interest rates high to hold the inflation, but keeping the interest rates high, it's also harder to increase the productivity in the country, and that causes inflation.
Now, Paulo, inflation here in the United States is about 1%. What's it like living in a country where prices are rising more rapidly?
Well, look, you know, it's about 5% in Brazil right now, and that's not even what would be considered really high in Brazil. I remember 20 years ago, inflation would reach the heights of 90% in one month, you know. That means like having a check in your hand. If you take 1 week to cash it, it already lost one-fourth of its value. So you do notice that your salary buys less and less over time. But I think the real fear in Brazil is to go back to that situation of hyperinflation that the country has experienced in the past.
The BBC's Paulo Cabral joining us this morning from Sao Paulo. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Steve.
Well, as we talked about, the Chinese president is in Washington for his U.S. visit. You'll probably see a lot of smiles from all sides as China tries to boost its image in the United States. But as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, the Chinese are also getting a little help from Madison Avenue in the form of a new TV ad.
The ad features Chinese NBA star Yao Ming, among others, and it comes from global ad agency Lintas. China could use some image buffing. Remember its imprisoned Nobel Peace laureate, its new stealth fighter? Public diplomacy scholar Joshua Fout says China needs a clear, concise message to the West, but that'll take more than just one ad.
Branding blast that just has faces on it, I don't think in the long term is terribly effective. The most effective tool for country branding is really communicating with people on a one-to-one level.
So China's opening language schools around the world and broadcasting TV shows in several countries and languages. As for its reputation here, a new poll suggests about 50% of Americans view China favorably, 35% unfavorably. Political scientist Dali Yang is with the University of Chicago.
Obviously not a very warm relationship, but this is a relationship that continues, and people recognize that.
In Washington, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We stay focused on the Chinese president's visit to the U.S., and we're going to talk now a little bit about the quality of life that's changed in Asia over the last few decades. This morning, with the Marketplace Globalist Quiz, we welcome Stefan Richter. He's publisher and editor-in-chief of theglobalist.com. Good morning, Stefan.
Good morning, Steve. How are you? Ready for today's quiz?
I am ready. I am ready. Let's do it.
Which Asian country's economic lot has improved the most since the 1960s and measured by income per person?
All right.
Is it A, Japan, B, Singapore, C, South Korea, or D, the eternal favorite for everything these days, China?
Since the 1960s, huh?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm going to guess China.
For once, China is not the top performer in global economic statistics these days. You know, they made $100 a year in current dollars of 1965. So see how far they've gone, and they almost make around $3,000 these days, at least as of 2008 data. And of course, that's increasing a lot. That's 2,800% more, but you struck out.
Okay, then let's try Japan.
Japan is number four among these options. But they've come a long way. They made $890 per year back in 65, and now it's over $38,200, and that's a 4,200% increase.
I'd like that raise. So, I'm not getting any raises, though, with the way I'm dealing with this question right here, Stefan. All right, let's try South Korea.
You are a genius. Bingo. 16,500% increase. So the South Koreans have reason to feel good about themselves. Back in 65, they made $130 a year. Now it's over $22,000 a year. That's pretty cool.
Stefan Richter, the editor-in-chief over at The Globalist. Find out more about the world at theglobalist.com. Stefan, thanks.
All the best. Bye-bye.
To Singapore now, where stock traders, Steve, will no longer be given an official lunch break.
Oh, no.
You and I don't really get an official lunch break either, but
this is
a new thing for them. Exactly. Yeah. The Singapore Exchange is scrapping its 12:30 to 2 o'clock recess on March 1st to keep up with its rivals across Asia, which many of them now don't have lunch breaks. If hungry traders want to blame someone for the change, well, they can start with computers. Those computers are doing more and more of the trading these days. And of course, Steve, those computers never ask to go out for a bite.
They're so selfless.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Wednesday, January 19th. I'm Jeremy Hobson in New York.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. Starbucks announced today their customers can now pay for their coffee with their smartphones. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall-Genzer spills the beans for us.
Starbucks says for consumers, phone payments are faster than fumbling for a card or cash. Starbucks also gets paid faster than it does with credit card sales. Initially, almost 6,800 company-owned Starbucks will accept mobile payments, along with more than 1,000 Starbucks stands in Target stores. Tech analyst Gary Arlen of Arlen Communications says Target and other retailers will be watching.
It's one thing to buy a $3 or $4 coffee out of this. It's another thing to put $30, $40, $100 or more on a charge.
Arlen says companies can reach out and touch you through your phone as you walk by, making mobile payments even more attractive.
You can tell people, well, if you come in right now, we'll give you a 20% discount because business is slow.
Arlen says Starbucks' mobile initiative will eventually percolate out to almost every other retailer. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall-Genzer for Marketplace.
Some good news this week on the consumer debt front. Monthly default rates are dropping on mortgages, auto loans, and credit cards. That's according to a survey from S&P Experian. But LA Times consumer columnist David Lazarus says debt-laden Americans should beware of a new product to help them dig out of financial trouble. David Lazarus joins us now with more on that. Good morning.
Good morning.
So tell us about this new product.
The product is called DebtWise. It's from Equifax. Right now, they're the only major credit bureau to offer it. But since these guys usually move in lockstep, we can probably expect Experian and TransUnion to have a similar product. It's basically an online tool that allows you to prioritize all of your debts and then try to pay them off in a manageable fashion. Equifax says they use algorithms and all sorts of things with charts and all that to make this thing as effective as it can. And I talked to the company, and they compared it to Weight Watchers, where they say, look, we've created a program that if you stick to it, it'll help make you debt-free, and all of that sounds like a good thing.
So getting rid of debt like getting rid of weight, is there anything wrong with that idea?
Well, when you look at the fine print of the brochure, Equifax makes it very clear they are not going to do anything else to help you. For example, they will not negotiate with creditors on your behalf. They won't guarantee any results. They won't provide you any counseling. This is all about just simply giving you a tool and then letting you do the heavy lifting. And that's pretty good, except they've also put in a few other things that you might not necessarily need, like, for example, daily credit monitoring, identity theft protection, and all of that allows Equifax to charge you nearly $15 a month.
So what can people do if they're facing big debt problems?
Well, first of all, if debt is your problem, recurring fees is probably not the answer. So you want to take a close look at that. There's an alternative out there. It's called the debt snowball method. I advise people to Google it and look at the nuts and bolts of it. But in a nutshell, what it is you prioritize all of your debts from smallest to biggest. You commit to making the minimum payment for every single one of them every month. And then whatever you can spare, you apply to the top debt on the list. When you get that paid off, you move to the next debt on the list. list, and so on and so on. And then, like a snowball rolling downhill, more and more cash becomes available to pay off your debts. Not a perfect system, but here's the beauty of it. It's free.
It's free, and I'm still surprised that David Lazarus, you there in Los Angeles, are talking about snowballs, but we'll leave that for another day.
Fair enough.
David Lazarus, consumer columnist at the LA Times, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And finally, Jeremy, as you know, we've all had a pet, right? A pet is a wonderful thing. The unconditional love of a dog. Maybe you're a cat person. The cat's all feisty and all that. But cleaning up after Chi-Chi or Charlie is something less than wonderful, right? Until now, Jeremy.
Finally.
I know. A new service in San Francisco that already picks up the mess that Fido makes outside, cleans up the yard, right?
Which I love these names that you've come up with.
Well, you know, they're dog names, right? And they're going to come to your home and now clean up the kitty litter box, too.
Oh,
they'll,
wow.
They'll actually replace it. The company is called Duty Calls, and it's spelled D-O-O-D-Y.
Wow.
And it asks that you seal the litter box. So you just take the litter box, put it outside the front door, put a top on it, and just leave it there. They'll come pick it up and replace it with new kitty litter. No word on how much the service costs, but depending upon your aversion to such things, Jeremy, it could be a step in the right direction.
Could be, and I'll pay any price, Steve. In New York, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.